Good morning, everyone. Please be seated. Okay, the first case on calendar this morning is Greenland versus KL, case number 73806. Are counsel ready to proceed? Would you please tell the clerk of the court how much time you wish to reserve for rebuttal?
Sure. I am going to endeavor to reserve 5 minutes of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Very well.
And I'll watch my time. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Kelly Dove, and I represent the appellant, Greenland, Greenland Supermarket. This case, as you, I'm sure you've surmised from the record, has a long and litigious history between these two parties, culminating most recently in an 8-day trial primarily about the issue of rent credits Greenland was seeking from the landlord KL. On appeal, Greenland is challenging just a few discrete aspects, discrete but critical aspects of the district court's ruling. First, the meaning of rent credits, as the district court relied improperly on an earlier piece of litigation between the parties. Second, the issue of waiver. And then, relatedly, the issue of attorney's fees. So first, on the issue of the meaning of financial statements as determines the rent credits, the district court, and as was the theory of a substantial portion of KL's case, relied on principles of res judicata from an earlier action between the parties to find that the definition of financial statements had already been litigated and determined in an earlier action. But that action didn't determine the meaning of financial statements and further didn't culminate in a final judgment. It was a dismissal of those claims without prejudice. And though that was the lion's share of the district court's reasoning in support of its finding and the subject of numerous motions to dismiss and motions for summary judgment brought by KL, KL seems to have abandoned that theory by characterizing it in its answering brief as extraneous and irrelevant. So as an initial matter, that we take that as a concession that KL is no longer relying on supporting the verdict on that basis. And I was going to move along on that basis unless Your Honors had any questions about that aspect of the holding.
Okay.
I think as our opening brief and reply brief lay out, once you strip away the court's reliance on the earlier order and the res judicata finding, there's really virtually nothing left to support its holding of the meaning of financial statements. This case did go to an 8-day trial, and really it's a little bit puzzling altogether because the parties have been arguing about the meaning of a contractual term, and so in some ways one might query how that led to an 8-day trial. I think there was a lot of back and forth with the parties' intent initially, which was the district court's reasoning for denying motions on summary judgment, saying there was a question of the party's intent, but then ultimately that wasn't the basis for the district court's ruling. Following trial, the district court substantially reverted to the res judicata reliance on the earlier case. And while there were competing experts about the meaning of financial statements with statements of gross sales, the district court really only alluded to that in passing, and when you again strip away all of the res judicata paragraphs out of the district court's order, there's really virtually nothing left. So that is our first basis for error. However, even if you were
so, are you challenging on your appeal the court's determination of what is a financial statement under the contract?
Yes, because the court held that Greenland failed to produce the kind of financial statements with gross sales that the contract contemplated, and our position has all along been that the intent of the parties has always been to provide statements of gross sales so that Greenland can claim rent credits, and KL has some data to support the amount of the rent credits that that Greenland was claiming. And so Greenland has all along, and indeed before Kale purchased the building and took over the lease from the earlier, its predecessor in interest, SMRI, Greenland had produced scaled, you know, the same type of roughly scaled back statements showing gross sales, but not the kind of robust financial statements that Kale came in and contended that they were entitled to receive.
Right. So part of what you're challenging is the holding of the court that by not having previously produced what it found was required, that your client waived the right to the prior rent credits for the last several years.
That's correct.
And so if we were to agree that it wasn't waived, is your client prepared to provide what the court found was required?
Yes, and in fact, Greenland already has provided that. I believe that's undisputed, because as of January 12, 2017, KL made another demand for those financial statements, and while they had been previously produced as confidential in discovery in 2016, Greenland turned all of the financial statements as, you know, meaning robust financial statements in January 2017 in response to that demand and before trial. So as of January 2017, Greenland had turned over all of the previous financial statements, again, under Kale's definition, from 2012 to 2017. So that already has been produced.
So if we were to accept that the district court's ruling was correct as to requiring a more robust financial statement, it went on and found some species of waiver, and I'd like you to address that point if you would.
Sure. So the district court, first of all, found that it sort of read in a time is of the essence, and this court sagely identified the case of Mayfield, which of course we find helpful here as well. The court read in a time is of the essence or a waiver provision. We argued as a waiver, but time of the essence applies as well, that if we didn't produce the financial statement within the following quarter, that we waived the right to seek the rent credits for that quarter. There is no such waiver provision in the contract. The contract does contemplate providing quarterly statements on a quarterly basis, but does not say if you don't, you waive the rent credits, or contain any time is of the essence provision such that if you don't provide them by a specific time, you waive the rent credits entirely. That had not been what the parties had done before. The record shows that in the previous litigation in 2010-2011, Greenland produced their version of financial statements back then. SMRI always had accepted them. So there's no explicit time is of the essence provision.
Hold on. When had they accepted them?
Well, before this litigation. Sorry, there was the 2010 piece of litigation.
Right.
Greenland counterclaimed for rent credits.
Right.
And then produced financial statements, or what it considered financial statements, during the course of that litigation.
Right.
And SMRI.
But they were arguing that that wasn't sufficient.
That never came.
Not the,
yeah, it never
SMRI
came up.
Predecessor.
Right. Well, SMRI really didn't get to that point because the court ruled that they produced the financial statements following the beginning of the litigation, and so the claim was unright.
Let me ask you this: going back to the waiver issue. Court pointed to paragraph 68 of addendum 2 as indicating a time requirement. Why isn't that correct? That's what it says.
Because it doesn't stress that time is of the essence. Lots of contracts have, I think that's part of what Mayfield teaches, is many contracts have deadlines and time provisions, but unless it's underscored by a time is of the essence, it doesn't function as a waiver, and that's what happened here. And further, I think one of the differences between our case and Mayfield that is helpful to us, even though there's a few distinguishing characteristics, is that Greenfield complied in the sense that it contended it was supposed to comply all
but
along.
Again, you're saying specifically because it didn't indicate time is of the essence, but the language there, if we take what you're saying, wouldn't that render the language there just meaningless? Creating a timing.
I don't think it does because I don't think that's generally the law of contracts. Because a sales contract on a house, for instance, will specify a closing date, but unless it says time is of the essence, that's not enforced as such. So I agree it does depart a bit from sometimes how somebody might read that as plain language, but I think that this court and the majority rule concerning the jurisprudence on that issue is that unless that's underscored by a time is of the essence clause, it's not strictly enforceable as such. But I think even so, while the district court found here that Greenland did not produce the kind of financial statements that the lease required them to, Greenland didn't wait 3 years and produce nothing and then come back and say, hey, I'm entitled to rent credits. They produced statements of gross sales that they thought in good faith satisfied their intent and what they contended was the meaning under the lease. So the fact that they're on the back end of that, where the court disagreed about their interpretation all along, they produced substantial statements of gross sales in attempted compliance with that provision and then later fully produced them. And if the court has no further questions right now, I'll reserve my time.
Thank you. Thank you.
May it please the court. Good morning, justices. My name is Amanda Parrock, and I represent the respondent, KL Vegas, in this matter. With me in the courtroom is my co-counsel, Jeff Silvestri, and KL Vegas' representative, Mr. Young Kim. Your honors, words matter. The words of the lease agreement matter. The words of the discovery commissioner matter. The words of Greenland in the prior action matter. And the words of the witnesses at trial matter. Now, we just heard argument from Greenland stating that there is no time is of the essence provision, and if there was, it would change things. Well, your honors, there is a time is of the essence provision, and it does certainly change things. The time is of the essence provision is on paragraph 21 of the lease, and specifically APP 3879. And it reads as follows, quote, time is of the essence with respect to the performance of the obligations to be performed or observed by the parties under this lease.
Sorry, say that again.
Quote, time is of the essence with respect to the performance of the obligations to be performed or observed by the parties under this lease. Now, under Mayfield, coupling this provision with paragraph 68, as Justice Paragary noted, it is very clear that Greenland was required to produce these financial statements on a timely basis. And even without the time is of the essence provision, it is here, and Mayfield makes it very clear that time is of the essence and there's timely performance is required. But even without that, the plain language of the paragraph 68 of the lease agreement clearly provides a time frame for performance. And in Mayfield, there was neither. There was not express language in the agreement that required a specific time frame for performance, and there was no time is of the essence provision. Now, looking at specifically paragraph 68 of the lease agreement, it provides, and I quote, lessee shall provide to lessor on a quarterly basis financial statements showing gross sales, paren gross sales, and paren, as defined below for the prior 3-month quarterly period. Greenland wants us to completely ignore those words.
Well, their point is that they were providing what they contended was there was due from them to satisfy that clause and that they were doing so. You disagreed and you wanted something more robust, to use Ms. Dove's word, but and ultimately you prevailed on that. But to say they did nothing is a bit unfair, isn't it?
I understand your concern, Your Honor, but I don't think it is unfair. In fact, the district court considered substantial evidence which evidenced the fact that Greenland always knew that it wasn't a gross sales statement that was required under the lease agreement. In fact, we heard testimony at trial from Greenland's president, Mihi Jang, where she testified she understood the term financial statement to mean an income statement and a balance sheet in its plain and ordinary sense. Also, we heard testimony from Greenland's expert, Randall Toman. He understood that term in its plain and ordinary sense to mean an income statement and a balance sheet. We also heard testimony from Greenland's CPA, also stating the exact same thing. Now, what Greenland tried to argue was that its intent deviated somehow from this income, this plain and ordinary meaning. And notably, intent of the parties is subject to an abuse of discretion standard. Now, the evidence presented at trial showed that the parties never intended to deviate from the plain and ordinary meaning. Excuse me. Now, specifically, in the judicial admissions that were addressed at trial, these are very important. And this is exactly why the doctrine of claim preclusion is really not at issue here. The district court referred to the prior action specifically for these judicial admissions. Now, Greenland filed a motion for summary judgment in its prior action with SMRI. In that motion for summary judgment, it identified in its Exhibit 6 what it considered the financial statements which would satisfy what it believed was paragraph 68 of the lease agreement. It didn't identify these gross sales statements that it's identifying here today. It identified income statements, which is consistent with what KL Vegas has been arguing all along. Greenland has always known that the term financial statements, as used in the lease, was taking on its plain and ordinary meaning. It's always known it was required to produce the traditional form of a financial statement, an income statement and a balance sheet. And no evidence whatsoever was produced at trial which could demonstrate otherwise. Under Reno Club versus Young, Greenland was required to provide the court with a sound reason to deviate from this plain and ordinary meaning, and it didn't do that. Your Honors, the court also heard substantial evidence through KL Vegas's expert witness, Mr. David Sack. Mr. David Sack explained exactly why financial statements, an income statement and balance sheet, are the type of documents that landlords typically require in these arrangements. He explained the importance of financial statements, and specifically he said financial statements have information that wouldn't otherwise appear in a gross sales statement. It would have inventory. It has gross profit margins. It has payroll. All of these things can be analyzed by an auditor to determine, are these sales being falsely inflated or deflated? And that's critical to a landlord who's basing its rent on the percentage of sales. That information would not be contained and was not contained in these gross sales statements.
Now, so if it's now determined, right, now that you've gone through years of litigation and have a ruling from the court determined what they were giving and thought was required was wrong, right? Why can't they now say, okay, here it is, or apparently maybe they already did, and get a credit for it?
I completely appreciate that question, Your Honor. The reason is the financial statements produced on a 4.5-year delay here are completely useless right now. We heard testimony at trial from David Sack, where David Sack stated it would be nearly impossible to audit a financial statement that old. The information that is used for auditing has gone stale. It's impossible.
So your client is intending to audit what they give? Is that the idea?
Well, the idea is what happens is the client would review the financial statements and determine whether there are any red flags, whether the inventory doesn't match up with the other information, with the sales. Inventory goes down, sales should go up. If that information provides red flags, then an audit would be conducted, absolutely. And that audit could not be conducted on such old financial statements. Now, David Sack's testimony at trial that he could not conduct an audit on financial statements that old was uncontroverted. There is no evidence from Greenland's side that the financial statements produced on a delayed basis like it did could provide the ability to audit at a later time. None. And that's exactly why allowing Greenland to produce these documents on this substantial 4.5-year delay would cause undue prejudice to KL Vegas and is inappropriate. Now, Your Honors, to move on to some of the additional arguments that were raised by Greenland. Greenland contends that the district court improperly relied upon findings of claim preclusion. This is inaccurate. The district court specifically stated in conclusion of law, paragraph 14, quote, the evidence produced at trial showed the term financial statement has a specific meaning. The court relied upon substantial evidence, 8 days of trial, 8 different witnesses, countless exhibits, in reaching its determinations. Now, as I mentioned earlier, we heard testimony from all of Greenland's witnesses corroborating the definition of financial statements. We also had judicial admissions from Greenland, where in the prior action, Greenland admitted that financial statements mean something more than this gross sales statement which it decided to produce. Second, Your Honor, with respect to the production, with respect to the production of financial statements at a later time, the production of financial statements was completely inappropriate to satisfy the lease. Greenland produced them during discovery, and that was not that was under a confidentiality provision. And again, this is more evidence of Greenland ignoring the words of the court. Greenland, in that case, ignored the discovery commissioner's decision that this would be used for discovery purposes only, and it decided to rely on it claims it relies on an information that is completely incorrect. Your Honors, the fact of the matter is, Greenland has failed to establish that the district court abused its discretion. Greenland is ignoring the words of the district court when it noted that it relied on the evidence produced at trial. Greenland is ignoring the words of all of its witnesses, and Greenland is ignoring the words of the lease agreement.
So the production that Ms. Dove referenced in January of 2017, was that still part of the discovery confidentiality production, or did they at that point actually provide them to your client?
At that point in time, they were provided to the client. Okay. That was 4.5 years after they initially were dated. July 2012 were some of those financial statements. And as I mentioned earlier, Mr. David Sack testified, an uncontroverted testimony, that these documents could not be audited.
Well, but the more recent ones could. I think you may be overstating his testimony, aren't you?
Your Honor, I understand that, but I am not overstating the testimony. Mr. Sack...
Well, you're implying that none of those statements could be audited, yet some were much closer in time to the date of production than others. So in that regard, that's what I meant.
I understand your concern here, Your Honor, but I think what it comes down to is under Mayfield, timely performance was required. It doesn't matter. At this point in time, Mayfield required that Greenland timely perform, produce those financial statements on a quarterly basis. Now, importantly, as time goes by, the information becomes less and less available. And that's a significant concern here. Again, Greenland did not provide any evidence that it could, that the financial statements could be audited. And based upon the substantial evidence produced at trial, it was clear that Greenland failed to timely perform. It knew all along.
The court here found, although it found waiver as to all the prior ones, that the financial statements produced April 28, 2017 for the last quarter of 2016 could still be used and relied on going forward to get a credit, even though the court specifically noted that actually that documentation provided in late April was more than the next quarter. It was 28 days past that. So is there strict compliance required or not?
Your Honor, there is strict compliance required. We decided not to appeal that issue,
right,
but we believe that that was probably an incorrect decision. The fact of the matter is Mayfield mandates timely performance here. There was a time is of the essence provision, and there was a specific language within the lease agreement that required performance on a quarterly basis. Greenland simply failed to abide by those requirements.
Could you invoke time is of the essence with respect to this?
Your Honor, we specifically identified the quarterly basis language in the documents.
I asked a bit of a different question.
I understand that. We did not identify that particular language specifically at trial. However, the lease agreement was produced as a trial exhibit, and within that lease agreement is a time is of the essence provision. And it was within the scope of evidence considered by the district court in reaching its decision.
Right, but in the dialogue between the parties, as take the lawyers out of this picture for a moment, they never said it's 31 days after the preceding quarter ended, you're out. We won't consider it for that reason.
Excuse me, I have a cold today.
No problem. I appreciate that question. I think it actually goes along with the Mayfield decision, where in Mayfield, the court said, if demands are made, that's another basis to mandate timely performance. Yes, we did. We made a demand August 5th, 2016, and said, produce financial statements within 10 days. Produce these documents. Now, Your Honors, that is on the record at, APP 4246 to 4247. That demand was made for specifically income statements and balance sheets. And a 10-day timeline was asked.
And when was that demand made?
August 5th, 2016.
Okay, so what about the years before? Was there a demand that this is inadequate?
Yes, Your Honor. Dating all the way back to December 23rd, 2013, there was a demand for financial statements. May 15th, 2015, there was a demand for financial statements, both of which noted that the gross sales statements were inadequate and did not satisfy the lease.
Did they raise timeliness?
I'm sorry?
Did they raise timeliness?
They did provide that rent credits would not be allowed without the production of financial statements. And in the August 5th, 2016 letter, there was a specific timeline for performance. Your Honors, with that, I would just ask this court, I respectfully request this court, to affirm the judgment reached by the district court.
Thank you very much. Ms. Dove, you have 4 minutes and
39 seconds. I will try not to talk too fast as I just want to respond to a few points. First of all, Greenland did not give away its whole case by admitting from the beginning of the party's relationship that it had to produce these robust financial statements. As we argued in our briefing, as far as judicial admissions go, this was not a litigated issue in the earlier litigation. Greenland did not prevail on the rent credits issue in the earlier litigation. And further, it's not a statement of fact.
Isn't there some evidence of how your client actually believed this provision applied?
There is some evidence, and some of that evidence from 2011 when Greenland gave SMRI what it considered it gave them a sales sheet and an income sheet. The letter accompanying that, first of all, said, we don't think we have to give this to you, but this is what we're giving you in satisfaction of the lease. And further, SMRI accepted that for years and gave Greenland rent credits on the basis of that. And further, those documents that Greenland provided back then would not satisfy KL's under their theory once they took over in this
litigation. So your point is the course of dealing between the two parties established an understanding of the clause that differs from what KL's was. But KL's point is you came into litigation, and I get that it doesn't establish issue preclusion or claim preclusion or a judicial admission since you didn't prevail, but isn't it some evidence if you said we satisfied it and it's this robust statement that they want? I mean, their point is it's at least some evidence, although they enlarge that.
I just don't think it supports their definition because, or Greenland's acceptance of their definition, because Greenland never produced what they wanted to produce to SMRI. And when Greenland said this is what we're producing, they qualified it by saying we don't think we have to under the lease. And number two, it wasn't what KL wants. So this idea that Greenland has known all along that they have to produce this version of what KL wants is belied both by how Greenland interacted with SMRI before and the fact that when KL made this demand, that's what precipitated the litigation. So yes, this has been years ongoing, but when KL made this demand in December 2013 and the parties realized they weren't going to reach an agreement, that's what precipitated this litigation over the meaning of financial statements. And even if time is of the essence, we still have the waiver issue, which is that Greenland did timely perform every single time. It's just that they did not perform in the way that KL contended they needed to perform.
And well, do you concede that the lease contains a time is of the essence clause and that that time is of the essence clause applies to this financial statement?
I'm not going to argue with the fact that it appears to all accept representation of counsel that it's in page 21, so it would generally govern, but I think we still have the waiver where Greenland did perform timely every single time. It does not contain any sort of strict strict compliance provision where just because it's later found that Greenland should have been providing these more robust statements, which they did on a qualified basis in 2016 and on an unqualified basis in January 2017, that they should not have the benefit of any rent credits going back. While, of course, we think we're entitled to the entire amount of rent credits, if your honors were concerned about the stale nature of the earlier ones, it might be worth exploring a more truncated basis. But that said, just because Mr. Sack's testimony came at the end of their case and was sort of uncontroverted by another or putting on another witness about auditing issues, that really wasn't front and center in the litigation. And finally, the 8 days of trial, to say the 8 days of trial was all about the meaning of financial statements really is belied by the record. The 8 days of trial had to do with extensive testimony over the processes of the sales and the process of gathering that data and auditing that data, none of which really benefited KL, because the district court ultimately concluded that our financial statements, once we produced them, were adequate, they were fine, they entitled us to those rent credits. And so that is really what consumed the bulk of that time. If your honors have no further questions, I see I'm out of time. Thank you. Thank you very much.